You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast, and once again, special thanks to Revolver Podcast for making all this possible. This wasn't my story, but it was my dad, who was a cop for 32 years. And this was one of his craziest calls. A call goes out for a reported screaming. It's in mid-January, which is important later. And my father and another officer respond to find a known deranged individual, very long rap sheet, and has been in and out of psychiatric care for years, sitting on the front porch holding a double-sided wood-splitting axe. Steam is coming up off the grass, and there are chunks lying all over the grass. Oh, God. Upon interviewing the suspect, he admits that he and a friend were playing poker. The suspect was losing nearly every hand and came to the conclusion that his friend was a haint, which is Southern for a ghost, and was cheating him. The suspect grabbed the axe and chased his friend outside, and cut him into a dozens of pieces, thus causing the warm blood to create steam on the grass. Oh, God. My dad tells the suspect that he needs to get in the police car because it's haint-proof. He said the suspect dropped the axe and sprinted to get in the back seat while thanking them for helping him. Oh, man. Now, that's not really paranormal. That's just deranged and twisted. So, I'm not sure how that one made it on the list. That's disturbing. Wow. All right, the next one. This one does sound paranormal, so I hope we're back on track here. It says, 3 years ago, our very elderly next-door neighbor died all of a sudden in her house, and they found her body 5 days later in the kitchen. Fast forward to last summer, I'm sitting in my house watching a movie, and all of a sudden, about 8 police cars come out of nowhere, sirens blaring, lights on, and most park in that empty house. Some park in my driveway, so I went outside to see what's up. A police officer went through the quick formalities and asked if I'd seen anything strange in the past 5 minutes. Well, I replied no, and rather hesitantly asked what's going on, and he said that the police department received a call from the house, and when the operator picked up, the line went dead. I stayed at a friend's house that night. Huh, so 3 years, this house is empty, but somehow there's still a working phone line? That's pretty bizarre. All right, so the next one. I was a 911 dispatcher for just about 5 years, right out of school. One night I got a call from a lady at a residence in town. 911, what's your emergency? Is this the police? She breathed. She was freaking out. heavy breathing, scared, shaking voice. I've taken many calls like this, and from the sound of her voice, this was not going to be a routine call. I sat up straight and my heart started to pump faster. Yes, ma'am, what's your emergency? There's someone in my house, she trailed off. Very breathy and genuine, but not loud and freaking out. Okay, are you located at... And then I gave the house address. Yes. Well, I dispatched cars to start heading to the address, and I don't give a reason just yet. Okay, do you know who this person is? Well, no, I think it's... I know this sounds so crazy, but I think that there's a ghost in my house. She begins to sob and sounds absolutely terrified. There's noises, and I know there is a ghost right in the other room. I can hear it right now. At this time, the sergeant asked me the reason, asked me the reason for the call and why I sent him in two other cars without explanation. Normally, you'd send one car to something like that. It's suspicious activity, I told him. What activity? He demanded over the radio, which is a fair question. Sir, the caller's claiming that there's someone in the house and she believes it to be a ghost. Silence on the air for about a minute. 10-4 is all he said. And by the time he got there, the ghost was gone and the poor young lady was freaked out mess. And she kept apologizing for calling us, but it was real, she kept repeating. The officers later told me that her sincerity actually freaked them out a lot. And when they searched the house, gun drawn, even they were scared. Oh, man, that is freaky. Terrifying. All right, now let's see. This is a police officer. I'm a police officer. And one night about 8 years ago, it was pouring outside, and we got a call from an elderly woman. Seemed to be a common theme in this thread. And she called in and said that she was hearing footsteps in her house, and she thought maybe there was a ghost inside because she regularly heard the sound of someone walking upstairs. But she lived alone. We went to just check it out and make sure that everything was okay. And she stayed on the line with the 911 operator because she was frightened. And about 3 minutes after she initially called in, she said that there was actually a man standing outside in her backyard, staring at her through her sliding glass door. Petrified, the woman froze in that spot and continued to stare directly at the man. For the next minute or two, she said that he was just standing there, still as could be, staring at her. Eventually, the man slunk off out of sight. When we arrived, about 12 minutes later, the call first came in, we went to the front door and I remained in the foyer with the woman, and the other officer went to the backyard to see if the man was still hiding out or if there were any traces of him. Well, I spoke with her for several minutes until the other officer returned. He said there was no trace of anyone having been in the backyard, and we set off to do a quick sweep before we left to make sure the house was all clear. In her living room, the room that has the sliding glass door, we discovered a trail of mud and footprints inside the house. I asked the woman if she had been outside at all that day or if anyone had been over to visit her, and she said no, and that she lived alone and that no one had come by to visit. The woman was very old, probably around 85, and had very poor eyesight and was hard of hearing, as elderly people can tend to be. The woman obviously had seen the man's reflection and mistakenly thought he was in front of her on the other side of the glass in her backyard. In reality, he had been standing only a few feet behind her in the same room while she had been talking to 911. Nothing was stolen, broken, or out of place, so we don't know what his intentions were. Who knows what would have happened had she not stayed on the line with the operator. I know it sounds like something out of a campfire story, but it was honestly one of the most unnerving and creepy experiences I have ever had while on duty. Jeez. Oh, that poor woman. She didn't know it was right behind her. Oh, man. Oh. Well, I guess it's better she didn't know that. It's better to think it's on the other side of the window. She's just sitting there staring at it. Huh. I'm a security patrol officer, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. in Scottsdale, Arizona. I have the largest security beat in the Scottsdale Desert, and part of my job is to respond to alarm calls in these isolated mansions throughout the Scottsdale, Cave Creek, and Carefree. One night I got an alarm at a small airport where the rich play with their airplanes, Sky Ranch Airport, and part of the airports are residential homes with built-in hangars, and that's where the alarm was tripped at 2:30 a.m. On arrival, I went through the normal alarm process, called the dispatch to make a call to the homeowners, which was vacant, so nobody should have been there. And after the call is made, I knock on the front door very aggressively just to make sure if someone is home that they'll hear me before I make entry. I walked in on the homeowners before at different houses. And anyways, as I walked toward the front door, I heard a little shuffling noise behind the door. Very faint, but loud enough to be noticed. That being the case, I rang the doorbell and knocked on the door longer than usual, and nothing. So then I began the perimeter check and found that the back sliding door handle was broken, but there was a little note on the inside that read, "Handle is broken," and that's signed by the realtor. The realtor paced, the realtor paced, P-A-C-E-D, a metal rod, down to keep the sliding door from opening. Well, I finished the perimeter check, called the dispatch to let them know that I was going to make entry, and the house was beautiful and everything was fine. So I wrote out my entry slip and was resetting the alarm, but a fault showed on the display that read, "Zone 35, back room door." And at that very moment, my supervisor called me via radio and asked if I knew anything about the house I was in. What he told me more than anything annoyed the hell out of me. He said back in 2008, the previous homeowner committed suicide by the front door with a shotgun when the economy crashed, leaving behind a wife and three children. I knew he was trying to scare me, so I brushed it off and resumed my business, and I walked to the back sliding door, and long behold, the metal rod was removed, and the sliding door was open about 4 inches, which was very creepy. The house has motion sensors, including sensors on the door itself, and none of them were showing up as fault. I put the rod back into its original place and armed the system, and a few months later I had an alarm call at a different house, and this time Scottsdale Police assisted me. After the call was over and done with, we stood outside the home just BSing, and I asked the police if they knew about the house in Sky Ranch Airport. One of the officers says he was one of the first police officers on the scene shortly after the homeowner killed himself out by the front door. They confirmed the suicide, and if I ever have to respond to that house again, I'll ask for backup. Yeah, you know, and I suppose there's the long-held belief that, of course, suicide is kind of the epitome of unfinished business, and many people believe that those who do take their own lives are, you know, perhaps going to be earthbound or stuck while they process whatever was going on that they couldn't face in life. And so, yeah, the house was vacant, but I don't think it was really vacant. I don't know. I think someone needs help crossing over. They need some help. Grandmother was a cop in the Santa Maria, in Santa Maria, in the late 70s till early 90s. Man calls in saying there's a 7-foot gray man at his door. She goes to check it out, and the door is jammed. The man is screaming, and she hears a loud buzzard. She slams the door open, and the buzz is gone. I guess a buzzer, not buzzard. It's spelled buzzard, like the bird. The buzz is gone, and so is the man. There's blood everywhere. She calls for backup, runs around, and calls his name. She hears what sounds like someone yelling, but someone is covering their mouth, and she finds him tied up, urine everywhere. Investigators say that he was in the room for at least 4 hours. The man lives alone in the middle of nowhere, says he called the police 5 hours ago and said that a cop was on their way. He reported seeing a 7-foot gray man with big eyes who did that to him. No footprints, no trace of any kind of invasion. My grandmother lost 4 hours somewhere, somehow. The guy ended up taking his own life a few years later, leaving a note behind, warning my grandmother that they are after him, and thanking her for rescuing him. This is absolutely crazy. Wow. We got one here coming from Indiana. That's a pretty short one. All right. Not too long, but it's coming from Indiana and says, my grandpa's house is haunted. Someone who killed himself used to live there. And at one time we were there for my grandpa's 50th birthday and everyone was downstairs and we heard a door slam upstairs and we all went up there and all three doors were lying on the floor. This happens repeatedly. The dog will stand at the bottom of the stairs during the day and will just stare at the top. During the night, the dog will go nowhere near the stairs and will bite you if you try taking it upstairs. On Christmas Day one year, we were eating Christmas dinner, and my uncle looked into the living room where the Christmas tree was, and it started shaking back and forth. He had my step-grandma look at it, and she saw it too, and he knew it wasn't just him seeing those things. One time, Grandpa and step-grandpa were out of town for a week, so my aunt came over to watch the house and to take care of the dog, and she went near the stairs and felt an evil thing near. She went to get a glass of water and felt something behind her. When she turned around, she saw a ghost. She ran, grabbed the dog, and left. She refuses to go back to that house. Our family does not like the house whatsoever. Grandpa and step-grandma do not mind living there. They said after all the years of living in the house, they've just gotten used to it. Well, I suppose you could probably get used to it after a while. I don't know. Can you get used to evil? Is that possible? No, I'm kidding. I do believe that it is possible. Unfortunately, it's not a gentle conditioning, though, I'll tell you. From what I understand of it, people have lived through some horrible, horrible things. And how they can continue to do that, I don't know. But I guess you can get used to evil. All right, the next one's coming from Michigan. Michigan again. All right. When my mom and aunt were kids in the 1950s, my aunt was taking piano lessons and learned to play this one particular song. And at that time, both parents were working, so my mom and aunt were alone for a few hours after school. And one day, my mom and aunt got home from school. They just opened the door to the house when my aunt freaked out and started crying. She claimed to hear the song she was learning being played on the piano in the, as of yet, empty house. My mom didn't hear it, but told my aunt that maybe she was hearing it because she was anticipating playing it for a long time. And my grandfather died of a heart attack in 1984 when I was just 6 years old, and my mom told me that a few days after he died, my grandmother received a phone call that was just static on the other end, and we really think it was my grandfather calling her. A few years ago, in 2003, my mom was at home alone in our present house, and she said a glass in one of the cupboards just spontaneously all of a sudden exploded, sending glass shards flying all over the place. It was true because we were finding shards all over the place even a few weeks later. My mom also has a violin that she plays, and a couple of times I've heard it play a note while it's shut up in its case. My dad said he's also heard it play. One time I was home alone and I heard a clunking and scratching sounds coming from our basement, and no, I did not go down to investigate. So there's some kind of musical ghost living around there, I guess. Not a real in-depth kind of story, but these are a lot of different events that happened over a period of time. And they're really, really pretty impressive, actually. Now, that's what I mean when I say most events are just one-offs. Most haunting events really do seem to be one-off. That's just one thing will happen, and then nothing more for a period of days or weeks or whatever. So, you know, that seems to be pretty much the status quo for most of the hauntings that happen. They're just one event, not consistently. And the presence is, you know, the whole lingering presence, feeling someone staring at you, that seems to be consistent. Like, that's not really an energetic event. But when things are happening that shouldn't be happening, those really don't seem to come in, you know, large groupings of events. It's usually just a one-off. So anyone else come in? Isaac came in. Good to see you, Isaac. I don't think I said Isaac before. So nope, nobody else. All right, the next one is coming from Connecticut. Connecticut. You ever notice how many states have like extra letters they don't even pronounce? It's Connecticut, but it's spelled Connecticut. It's Illinois, but it's spelled Illinois. It's Missouri, but it's spelled Missouri. But the locals say Missouri. So I don't know. Very strange. All those idiosyncrasies, huh? I don't know. This is how random my mind is sometimes. And today it feels pretty random. I'm kind of running on fumes today. So I hope you can bear with me. And I hope my babbling is at least a little mildly entertaining. All right, this one is from Connecticut. When I was younger, every weekend I would sleep over at my grandmother's house. And I'd sleep in the living room on the floor across from the wall where the other, where the stairs were. And now, you couldn't see the stairs. They were blocked by the wall. But I'm not the only one to have experienced what I'm about to write. My cousins have all had the same thing happen to them when they slept over. I'd be asleep and awakened to my grandfather clock going off, and it went off every hour, but the only time it would wake me up was almost midnight. I'd roll over as it was going off, and I could see a white light come from the stairs, and I would pull my blanket up so that only my eyes were peeking out and watch, and every time it happened the same way. The light would get closer as it came down the stairs until it turned the corner, and as it turned the corner, it would fade away. That's all it ever did. It was scary when it was happening, but nothing bad really ever happened. So now the story is called The Lady Upstairs, but to be honest, I don't know if it was a lady. I guess it just kind of felt like a woman, the white light resembling a dress to me. And one night, I had a dream that I still remember vividly. I woke up to the light in my dream, but this time I went up the stairs, and as I was walking up, the lady leaned over the banister and started screaming at me. I woke up after that and assumed the light was this lady, and I would also wake up sometimes and it would feel like my hand was being held. I couldn't see anything. It was just like feeling the pressure on my hand the way it would feel as if somebody was holding it. So that's my story, and it's not really scary, but it happened, and I have a question. I'd like to ask the more experienced people. My cousin died in November, and my uncle says he can still feel her presence. I haven't felt it. I want to, and I pray that she'll come to me just so I can see her one last time. I know it's selfish of me if she's already moved on, but the last time I saw her was a year before her death, and I was wondering if there's any way to get her to come to me. Oh, no. I know a lot of the experiences on here are random, and they're just there, but is there any way to actually bring her here? I've already tried a Ouija board, and it didn't work at all for me. Please help. Yeah, I don't know. If they're going to come to you, they're going to come to you, you know. You can just send out your love, and not that this person is hearing me. This story is from 2008, so it's a long, long time ago. But, you know, for those of you that may be wondering the same thing, how do you bring them to you? Well, I don't think you bring them to you. You just, you know, reach out with your heart and hope they'll come, and maybe they will. So the next story, ladies and gentlemen, is coming from Missouri or Missouri, depending on how you play that one. let's see what's going on in Missouri. This story happened to my grandmother. Picture it, mid-1960s. Every novelty store had a strange game called Ouija board. Dun, dun, dun. It was considered good fun to use one. In fact, it became the party tradition for a group of friends. Almost every day, a party would be held at one person's house to play the Ouija board. They didn't think of the consequences of using the board, and why would they? It was just a game. Then one late Friday night, a newcomer came to the party. 20 people gathered around the table to show this woman what fun they would have with the Ouija board. My grandmother was the leader, though, and she knew the Ouija board better than anyone else there. She volunteered to play with this newcomer, and all throughout the night, they played the Ouija board, and they thought it was an innocent game until weird things started happening. The doors and the windows were opening by themselves. Things were thrown against the wall, and they all thought it was a joke. They thought one of the partygoers had set up this elaborate joke, but it wasn't a joke. They asked who was in charge of the Ouija board, and the board spelled out S-A-T-A-N. Everyone's expression was blank. They realized it wasn't a joke. Nothing happened after that. My grandmother never touched the board again. Dun, dun, dun. That's creepy. Definitely creepy, but I, you know, here's the thing. I might be speaking way out of turn. I mean, there's no basis for me to say this other than just my intuition, but I just have a hard time believing if there is this really powerful Lord of all evil, Lord of all darkness, if there is, and I know there's darkness, don't get me wrong, but if there is this one commanding figure of it that, you know, we all, most of us recognize as Satan, or at least know that when you hear Satan, it's talking about this one being that is like the Lord of all darkness. I don't know if there is this really powerful being, I have a hard time believing that he's going to be wasting a lot of his time or her time, whatever it is, male or female, with, playing with people on a board game, you know, and I know a Ouija board is, you know, it's more than just a game, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, I think if there was this huge presence in charge of all the evil and darkness, they're probably going to be dealing more with global kind of events, not trying to, trick, you know, 8-year-olds into selling their soul. But I don't know, just me. Just my two cents for whatever it's worth. And again, I have no basis for saying that. And I'm probably speaking way out of turn on that, but I don't know. Just my two cents. All right. Let's see. I got to pull up some more. No calls on the board. So we're doing just fine here. It was a beautiful day here today, too. The temperature was really wonderful. Until this afternoon, it finally got really hot this afternoon, but it was pretty lovely. Nice breeze. Gorgeous blue sky. Not that you came to hear the weather report, but just thought I'd throw that out there. All right, the next one's coming from New York, ladies and gentlemen. New York. This story is taking place in the apartment in my room in which I still live in to this very day. It was the second house I moved in since I was 4 years old, and I was sitting on my queen-size bed that me and my mom sleep in, and I just finished drawing a broken heart. And I was just about to put it away when I suddenly felt cold air around the room. It was strange because it was a very hot and humid day, and the windows in the back of me were tightly shut. I took my sweater and put it on, and suddenly the chill was gone, and it became hot again. I was curious, very curious, and I kept wondering how the room temperature could change so drastically and quickly. And I thought my mom turned on the air conditioner, but she was nowhere around, nowhere in sight at all. Then I suddenly remembered that she was downstairs trying to carry boxes with my aunt. And now that the room is back to its normal hot temperature, I went in the kitchen to get a drink, and then as soon as I turned around to leave the kitchen, I felt the temperature change and it became cold again. I was walking back to my room and then suddenly I see something strange happen. I saw hands pointing to my aunt's room and the bathroom. Those hands I saw was no joke. The strange hands pointing to the room were pure white as if there was no blood in them, and they also looked very cold. I closed my eyes trying to forget about what I just saw, and it was very paranormal and it really scared me. I couldn't forget about that day, and I swore never to tell my mom because I was sure that she just would never believe me. To this day, I still look back and wonder why the hands were there. And why were they pointing to my aunt's room in the bathroom? Maybe it's a sign of something that will happen in the future, or a sign that is telling that something did happen in this house before I moved in. Very strange. All right, Virginia. We're going to Virginia. And it's a good thing Virginia is here in the chat, because we're going to Virginia. All right. It says, when I was around 4 years old, I was living in a house which really isn't that far from where I live now, and it isn't that far from my high school. It all started by me seeing a shadow figures or people in reflections, and of course, me being four, it really scared me. Well, one night I was awoken in a start and just happened to look out my window, and what I saw really shocked me. It was a shadow figure, but not the normal ones. It was moving as if it was trying to get into the room or into the window. I screamed, and my father came in and turned on the light and went to the window and saw absolutely nothing, and I told him to turn the light off and look again. There was nothing. He passed it off as a bad dream, but it was too real, and now you're saying that it could have been a prank or a tree. Well, my room is on the third story, and the tree that was by it was, and it still is, a pretty big tree, but in no way looks that much like a person. I was tormented with bad dreams until the point where I couldn't sleep in that room, and I slept in my parents' room until I was about 8. Now, when my friends sleep over, we wouldn't sleep in my room because they would refuse. In fact, they would just refuse to go anywhere near it, and I would have my toys brought downstairs. And well, one night, my friend and I were playing with my wrestling figures, and we put them down and went to sleep, and the next morning, they were scattered all over the room, some on top of each other and others just laying there. I would hate being there alone after dark and wouldn't leave the living room or the computer room. Just some real general events tonight. Nothing really over-the-top profound, but some really general events. But profound all the same. Not that there's there's no such thing as normal in terms of the paranormal, but you know, they're just kind of one-off events again. It's just this happened once, and this happened once, and then this happened once. And I think those are the more normal, to be honest with you. I think those are the more traditional kind of ghost experiences. So we're going to Indiana now. I've always had strange things happen, and come to think of it, a lot of the time in my life, I do not consider myself a ghost hunter, and I'm under experienced of seeking the paranormal, and it just seeks me. One of the more interesting periods is when I lived in a seniors/disabled community with my mom, apartment 106 and 107. What is this? It's kind of written like a log. Well, it's a long story. So 106, 107, location, Village Green Apartments, Decatur, Indiana, 1998 to current. Now, when I said I live with my mom, I didn't live in the same apartment with her. I was a neighbor, able to live out there due to a heart condition from birth. Firstly, a lot of people in this complex have died at home. Sometimes they aren't found immediately, and it's a sad thing. The former resident of my mom's apartment, the one she currently lives in, had a woman die in the home, and for a short while after my mom moved in there, doors had a habit of going shut. Gently, mind you, nothing to get really spooked over. I just think the previous tenant wasn't quite ready to leave. My apartment next door, I fully believe, is cursed, and I knew I knew two of its previous occupants. One, a lonely and not completely sane elderly woman, sorry, who had serious bouts of depression, and she was moved to a nursing home where she passed away. By the way, her home was crowded, too much stuff, and it was dirty, and it was, this is important later. The next occupant was an elderly couple who had a lot of things in the small apartment, including a piano, and the home was not clean either. They too were moved out into a nursing home. I then took possession of my home, and my mother's health was failing, and I wanted to be closer to her to look after her, and none of my furniture seemed to fit. I had trouble keeping the apartment clean to my liking, and I suffer from depression, suicidal thoughts, mood swings, and nothing could go right. I wasn't there a year. Then a man moved in next door, and the theme continued. Depression, uncleanliness, unhappy with life. He moved after a very turbulent year. Now a woman battling cancer, her brother and his wife live there. The wife is reacting to the worst of the apartment. There's fighting, depression. The wife's tried to commit suicide at least twice since living here, and they've only been here for a few months. Apartment 107. Occurrences in my mom's apartment have not been limited to just the previous tenant resident. They are what she calls skitters. Little shadows that wiggle across the floor. And I've seen these upon going into a darkened room, and they swarm across the floor and disappear, and she thinks they are woodland animal spirits. Incidentally, she lives right by the forest there. She had an experience in the middle of the night calling me terrified. Something woke her up, and she felt a darkness in her room, and she, in her words, said it felt like Satan himself stuck his head in her room. She prayed until it went away, but she was severely shaken by it. She's had this happen before and considers it to be a demonic spirit sent by someone, and they're usually accompanied by an unexplainable sulfuric odor that permeates the room and dispels only with prayer. At times you can see shadows moving outside in the dark, but there's no source, just a human-shaped shadow. One night that happened to me, and I was sitting there drinking coffee in the kitchen. We were talking at her table when a shadow passed by the window. This was at night, bright kitchen lights shining out, but it looked like someone walked in front of the windows. No one was out there, but the weirder part is, as this happened, I felt a fingertip brush up my forearm, which had just been resting on the table nearest the window. I was freaked out. I've never been touched by a spirit before. Another experience was in the middle of the day, springtime, bright, beautiful sunlight, birds singing. My mother, son, and I were heading out to take a walk, and I glanced down the sidewalk to a neighbor's car, seeing a man in a brown tweed suit and a hat standing there. He looks right at me, smiles, tips his hat, and I figured he was over visiting the neighbor man, Fred, or was out for a walk, and then he steps off the curb by the parked car into the parking lot and disappears into thin air. Oh, that's pretty cool. That's a cool manifestation. I like that he acknowledges her, like, good day. And then just walks into the parking lot and vaporizes. That's awesome. I could have wet my pants, and I asked my mom, who was right beside me, if she saw the man, and she said all she saw was a shadow by the car. I felt kind of hysterical after that. He didn't seem threatening, just kindly old man. He looked real. He was solid. The light didn't pass through him, but he didn't have a shadow. Well, not on the ground. I know what I saw, but part of my mind wants to doubt what I saw that day, too. My mom swears she saw a white wolf out there in the middle of winter, and I can remember going out to look for tracks in the snow. Of course, I didn't find any. There's a huge doe that comes up in the early morning, late evening, and there's an oak tree that has some kind of nature spirits attached to it behind my mom's apartment. And there are times of going outside, you look into the woods, and it feels like something malevolent is watching you. The woods are quiet when this takes place, and it's a horrible feeling. Insecure and afraid, and it doesn't want you anywhere near the woods. I challenged it one night and told it wasn't going to be scared of it anymore. and that I would stop. It should stop, and I haven't been bothered by it since. Not directly, and it seems to have retreated further into the woods, instead of just right there at the edge. It isn't always there. Sometimes there's just this bright exuberance from the woods that makes you smile. I got a frantic call from my mom in the evening around 6:30 p.m. or so, wanting to know if I was all right, and she heard a wolf howl. She swears it. It was found out later, at the time she heard the howl, a pair of men, different apartments, both passed away out there. One dropped over all of a sudden from a heart attack while showering, and another was an hour later of natural causes. We were both shaken by that. It is interesting, just the things that happen out there alone. But then when you stop and think of all the emotions and energy and how many of those people have died at home, it's no wonder stuff happens. I'm interested to hear ideas and theories from anyone else out there, and any ideas of what this all is and why. Well, I think the person writing this said it all. I mean, it's a home where people they're on the last leg of their journey. And so perhaps there's just a natural portal there from people coming and going all the time. It's maybe generated a psychic portal of sorts. Very wild. Pretty cool encounters for what it's worth, but a lot of disparate phenomena. Nothing really cohesive in all of that. You know, it was just a lot of odd things happening. And so that's what kind of leads me to more of a natural portal, or a portal of sorts, having appeared there due perhaps to all of the sadness and pain and suffering and people just, I don't know, living out their last days. I would bet, for what it's worth, that was the case, but what do I know?
I'm just a guy with a microphone.
All right, going back to Indiana, folks, Indiana. This one has to do with sleep paralysis. And this is a bizarre phenomenon, and you'll remember Carrie from Bigfoot Odyssey called in, and he was talking about having sleep paralysis, but he thinks it was the more medical kind of sleep paralysis. And if he didn't, I mean, there is a medical sleep paralysis, and I don't think anybody can discount that and just say, well, no, it's all spiritual. No, I think there is a medical form of sleep paralysis that's very real, but I do believe there's something else too. A lot of the experiences that he was talking about were very similar to what I experienced, except there was a big difference in that it always felt like someone was there doing it. It always felt like someone was right there just keeping me just out of my body enough that I couldn't do anything. And it was just a horrible, horrible feeling. And then it would be really seductive. Like, I would try to wake up. I could maybe open an eyeball just a little bit, and then it would just suck you back into sleep. It was like something kept sucking me back into sleep, and it was horrible. And then I would have dreams that I was waking up and be like, oh, thank God I got through that. And then I'd realize that I wasn't actually awake and I was still sleeping, and it was horrible. It was just horrible. It was like something kept pushing me out so I couldn't quite get in, and it was just a terrible experience. And again, something he said just really rang a bell with me, and that was just moving a finger, just moving something, you know, trying desperately to make enough noise to alert your spouse or whomever was sleeping next to me. And, you know, I remember doing the same thing, just like I knew that all it would take was the touch of someone else to, you know, maybe shake me, and then it would just jar me out of it. But God, it was like a million miles away getting that to happen, because no matter what you would do, you had no command of your body, and it was horrible. But it always felt like there was a dark presence there doing it. And you know, so I don't know if mine was just medical or if it was spiritual. It felt spiritual, but again, you know, maybe that's the mind manifesting some kind of logic to it. I don't know. You know, I can't claim that everything's paranormal. I mean, that's just not the real world. It's just some things are just normal. But it felt paranormal. It felt really, really weird. I really did not like that. And thank God I got through that cycle of that, and I had to learn how to break it. Once I learned how to break it, it was like it just stopped. So, I don't know. Take that for, to mean what you will, but... Well, hello, Miss Cha-Cha. Good to see you. Anybody else come in? Chris Guy, how you doing? Brown Dwarf, good to see you. I think the paranormal is normal. That's a good point. And quite honestly, paranormal just means above normal or not quite normal. It doesn't mean that it has to be super fantastic out of this world. It's just abnormal things can be paranormal. It's just... You know, so it doesn't have to meet this really huge criteria. So I think that's important to bear in mind, because I think a lot of people hear paranormal and they think it's got to be this, you know, life-changing event, and it doesn't. A lot of times paranormal things can almost be mundane, you know, just very subtle. But, you know, like you put your car keys down, you know, you put them down someplace. Like for me, I'm a person of habit. I always put my things in the same place. I'm very strict and rigid about that. Like everything goes in the same place, because then, you know, everything goes back into where it goes when I'm going, you know. And when you go to that place, you know you left something there and it's not there. Now, that's not a life-changing event. It's really pretty mundane, but there's no explanation for how come that item isn't there. It should be there. You know, remember clearly doing it. I've done it thousands of times. But suddenly it's not there. Then to look all over the place for it and come back and it's in the place where it was supposed to be in the first place. So those events are not earth-shattering, life-changing, but they defy explanation. They're not normal. Something happened that isn't the way it's supposed to be, or that we believe it's supposed to be. So the paranormal doesn't always have to be off the charts, this, you know, these incredibly profound events. They can be subtle events, but if, you know, if it's doesn't follow the normal string of logic, then perhaps it's paranormal. And, you know, I don't pretend to be able to identify what is paranormal and what isn't, but I know for me what I've identified as paranormal. But, you know, other people may disagree, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be 100% consensus. In our world nowadays, it's pretty apparent that people think that disagreement is the same thing as, you know, challenging. And that's not the case. You know, we can have different ideas. We can have different opinions, and that's all right. We don't all have to think the same way. In fact, I think we're better when we don't. That, you know, more ideas are discussed. We come at things from different angles, and that's a strength. We have more minds coming at things from different directions. But, you know, when you look at the politics lately, it's like, it's either this or this. And it's like, most of us are in here. We're not this or this. Most of us are in here, and we can relate to both things to some extent. But I'm telling you, there's some real madness going on right now. It's just frightening. Just frightening. So, Indiana, not that I should get on the soapbox, but it's my show, and sometimes I get up on soapboxes. So I don't mean to bug you, but it's just the way I roll. All right, so Indiana. It was the middle of the day on a Saturday, late summer, and for some odd reason, I started feeling really tired, like I should go take a nap. It's really odd, since I don't usually ever take naps, and being that I'm an energetic teenager. So anyway, I lay down on the couch, and before I know it, I'm drifting off. Then all of a sudden, I feel a very evil presence around me, like an impending doom or something was not right. Yep. I am suddenly paralyzed and can't move. I look around and everything looks the same in the house, except it's all dark and eerie, and I can see an evil entity standing before me. It straddles on top of me and presses down on my chest, and I try to move, but I can't. I start feeling breathless, and suddenly, while the entity is on top of me, my eyes close and I see colors swirling around and hear the sound of babies crying. Then I pray in my head to God to help me, and I feel the entity getting angrier and leave. I feel an overwhelming sense of good come over me, and then all of a sudden, I fall asleep, and I wake up a few minutes later, and when I wake up, I feel really tired and drained. I'm freaked out, and I look around the house looking for anyone that could have been up on top of me, because I truly felt someone on top of me, and I thought maybe someone was really hurting me while I was hallucinating, and I find that my mother is still gone, and I'm the only one in the house. I can't come to grips of why, but this has happened to me with different entities, etc., about 3 more times since then. If anyone knows why, please help. Thanks. I don't know why, but it does happen. There, you know, the old hag syndrome is what it was recognized in the antiquity, but it does seem to suggest there are some entities that really need to feed on the living, that, you know, it's not necessarily a succubus or incubus that uses a sexuality for that energy, but it's like something different. It's something even darker, if you will. And it just seems to draw on the not necessarily the life force, but the energy of a person. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it exists. I don't know what the best way to handle those kind of things are, because they are a bit different. But as far as I know, prayer usually seems to be really powerful against things like that. Perhaps, you know, saging can keep that energy knocked down in your house so they wouldn't come in. Trying to seal your house against any darkness is always good. There's lots of techniques for that, and you'd have to refer to whatever it is you resonate with religiously, but, you know, they have to come in order to come to you. And so if you do a good job with your house and sealing it, and whether with, you know, prayers, holy water, whatever, sage, whatever, meditation, it's up to you to decide what resonates with you. But if they can't get in, they can't do the crap they do. So it's worth a shot. And if there is something lingering, you can certainly get it purged. But I don't know that it's a traditional ghost. I don't think it's a traditional haunting. It's something else. And these are the kind of dark entities that I talk about. You know, I mean, people use the term demon, and it seems to imply anything that's a dark entity. Now, there are truly demons. There are truly devils. There are, you know, those really, really dark, evil things. But there's a lot of other dark things that aren't demons. They aren't devils. But they do subsist off of the living somehow. And in my eyes, that makes them twisted and you know, not good. They're like big mosquitoes, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, it's important to know how to psychically protect yourself or spiritually protect yourself, however you want to address it. But, you know, I think it's important. So look into those things if you are indeed suffering those same kind of problems. All right, Nebraska is next, ladies and gentlemen. How are we doing for time? 48 minutes. I guess I have been talking for a while, but I got a couple more here, so I'll get through these. This one's actually really long, but I'll get through them both because I love you guys, and I can't just, you know, I got to give you the whole deal, the whole buffet before I go. So, oh, Tesla Tech came in. Good to see you, Tesla Tech. Anybody else? Nope. Okay. Nebraska. I've been wanting to write my experiences for an awful long time, and it's just one of those things that are very hard to talk about, but as of lately, I've been thinking about it more and more and have even had a few nightmares. And I think another reason I've never shared this was because now that I'm older and have children of my own, I know that playing with a Ouija board is just asking for trouble. I just wonder if anyone else has had similar experiences. So to start off, I have to kind of explain a little. Sorry this is long, but I had to tell you everything. When I was a teenager, I had the two best friends, Sherry and Beth, and they were the kind of friends that you did everything with and would do anything for, and Sherry and I were inseparable since I moved back to Nebraska from Texas, and Beth and I have been friends since kindergarten. We kind of bonded since we had the same name growing up, and they were the kind of friends that were just close as sisters. The first few times we ever played with a Ouija board, we were just kind of fun, playful times, or so I thought, and nothing too out of the ordinary. Sherry had a board, and she had in her room that we would use at sleepovers, and I never quite figured out how they worked. I was young and naive, and we would ask it about boys and things, and it always amazed that whatever the name was that I had in my head at the time, the board would always spell. It was always like it was reading my mind, and Beth was a year older and braver, so she would ask crazier questions, which I will explain later. I remember we even asked the name of the person we were talking to, and it told us that the name was Yuri. Y-U-R-I. Yuri. So one day, we were using it at my house, and my dad came home and found it. My father, being pretty religious, was very upset and said no one would be using one of these at his house, and threw the board in our Oscar, which is trash can. And that was that. A few weeks went by, and he came in the house all mad and yelling that he told me it needed to stay in the trash. Well, it was out of the trash, and it was on the table in the garage. Crazy. I promptly took it back down to Sherry's and left it there. The next time and last time that we played with the Ouija board was at a slumber party. Sherry was at a dance, so I went to the party with Beth for one of the girls from her school, and Sherry and I went to the public school in town, and Beth went to the Catholic school. So we were playing with the board, and all the girls were taking turns playing, and I think we were going two at a time, so it was mine and Beth's turn. I'll never, ever forget this for the rest of my life. Beth asked, and I don't know why, we were just 14 and stupid, the board, how and when we were going to die. I told you she was always asking crazier things, so the thing that I can never forget is that the board told us that we were both going to die young. And Beth went a little bit further and asked how, and it said that she was going to die in water. At this time, I'm freaked out. I hadn't really wanted to play, and Sherry was there to get us. So we, of course, told Sherry all about it and tried to laugh it off. Fast forward 6 years, Beth and I both had graduated, and we were still friends. We still had a bond. We just didn't talk like we used to. We both had grown up, gotten boyfriends, Beth even had a baby, and then got married. One day in November, a girlfriend came over and asked me to sit down, and she proceeded to tell me that Beth and her husband had been in a car crash and had hit a patch of black ice and lost control, hitting a truck head-on. They were killed instantly. Their daughter was in the back seat and was only saved because of proper positioning of the infant carrier. I remember feeling like I was hit in the stomach and had the wind knocked out of me when I heard this. Afterwards, you kind of go into a non-reality mode where you don't want to believe something happened, and then the sorrow and anger comes when the loss finally hits you. I can never imagine how their family felt and how they came to grips with a loss like that. Two young people taken away like that. Life around us has gone on, but you never forget. I got married, and Sherry was my maid of honor in my wedding, but Beth was there in spirit. We had a candle lit and rose for her also. So time has passed, and a few friends and I share memories, and that night with the Ouija board comes up. Was it just mere coincidence that Beth died at a young age and on ice, water? So then nightmares started. I wondered about my own mortality, and I've realized that I too was told that I will die young. Does this mean 30 or 50? I have children of my own now. Will I be taken away like she was? As of lately, I've had a few health scares that have been in the hospital for cancer testing. A small comfort was that Beth's mother was my recovery nurse in the hospital, and scariest 10 days of one's life is waiting for test results, and now I've been diagnosed with precancerous condition and will have testing done 2 to 3 a year. So now I ask you, can a spirit and a Ouija board predict the future? Or was it just an evil thing said to two young, naive teenagers messing around with something they should not have been messing with? I realize this is not the average story written, but would love to hear thoughts from all of you. Here's the thing. I don't know if anybody's path is written in stone like that. I don't think I don't think that. And I also think that attributing black ice to water is probably a pretty huge stretch, really, because black ice is not as much to do with water as it is with condensation from usually from exhaust, as I understand it. And it makes roadways slippery, but that's a pretty big stretch from saying you'll die in water to your car slipped and you crashed. I would say that that's probably pretty coincidental. I don't know that, you know, again, I don't know that anybody's path is just that concrete. Like, well, here's how you're going to die. I think that's even in the case of like when Deb's doing readings, she'll be the first to tell you that nothing's cut in stone. You know, one choice can change everything. One decision can change it all. But a reading is just a look at where things are going the way they are. We at all times are always empowered to make change and to create different circumstances. I firmly believe that. So the idea that there's a fate and we're all destined to, I don't believe that. I think we have fates, but there are just a multitude of possibilities, and we create them with every choice we make throughout every day of our lives. So I think that that's a pretty huge stretch to say that the Ouija board was right. Yeah, she died young, but, you know, people die young, and that's not supernatural. That's just life. So anyway, just my two cents. The last one tonight has come from Oregon, and this one's real short, and I did say Oregon for Don. For Don, if you're out there, I said Oregon, just so you know. It was early morning when I suddenly got a chill that just woke me right out of my bed. I'm one of those people who hates the cold, so I sleep with 3 blankets and a heater on, but I was still cold. I pulled the blankets tightly against me to stay warm, and I fell back asleep again, but this time I was woken up by the sound of a voice. It was the same voice that I always hear. I looked around my room and saw nothing. Everything was normal. I laid back down thinking I was just freaking out when a candle holder that sits on my shelf shattered. I jumped out of bed and saw the glass on the other side of the room, and the candle was still on the shelf. I could stay in my room because I was too afraid. I could stay in my room because I was too afraid, so I was going to jump up in bed with my dad, but when I got up to go to his room, he'd already gone to work. I was alone. I grabbed my blanket and sat on the couch, hoping that it was going to be okay and nothing else would happen. I started to hear a laugh, like a man's laugh, and I knew it had to have come from whatever had been bothering me, so it was far away at first, but it seemed to be getting closer when finally it just stopped. It hasn't been known to just leave so fast. I was afraid that something was going to happen, and 15 minutes later, a car pulled up into the driveway. I was scared, but knew it was only my sister and brother being dropped off by my mom for school. That's freaky. I don't know. This whole shattering glass things that's pretty profound, but I don't know. That's the show tonight, though, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed our journey. I hope you guys have a wonderful night. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. I love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.